What's up, buddy?
You know?
Hey, happy July 4th weekend, man.
Happy July 4th weekend. It is the 4th of July weekend here in the United States of America, where we celebrate our freedom from the evil Brits, and then they
get drunk and eat a lot of barbecue.
And then we
can shoot off and blow some shit up later on too. So
yeah, and here in Miami, people shoot guns in the air and bullets come down and kill people occasionally. And you know, it's just good old America.
So dude, I've been out of town, but man, I've been reading about all the heat wave down there. I mean, like the highest heat indexes of all time.
I hadn't even noticed that we were having the highest indexes of all time. It just feels like Miami hot to me. I don't know. I didn't notice.
Well, you know, you're a veteran, so you know not to go outside between 10 and 2.
Sitting in the room, it's AC, like, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like AC car, garage, another garage, out AC area, you know? It's like...
Exactly.
But what else was going on, man? What'd you do?
What have I been doing? I have been... working, tweeting, blah, blah, blah. Doing a little bit in our Telegram group. And let's see what else. It was my son's 17th birthday on Saturday. So that was weird.
Congratulations.
I don't know how that happened. And well, I mean, I know how that happened, but.
That's what she said.
John, happy Traitor's Day in advance, Americans. I wanted to play today. Do you know the song? Oh, what's the fucking musical about the
Hamilton?
Yeah. You know the song with the king singing?
Not really.
You'll Be Sorry. Oh my God, it's a great song. It's just a great song after the Declaration of Independence and we win. He does this whole song. The character, the guy who plays him is brilliant.
Was he playing like King George or somebody?
Yeah, it's King George, okay. and he's like, "You'll be sorry when I'm gone," blah blah blah. But I can't play it, or our YouTube channel will get blocked. But it's a hilarious song. I'll put a link to it in the show notes because it's a great song. It cracks me up. So now,
we always had that soft spot for the Brits. Anyhow, you know, that's why we permanently keep you guys in the 51st state position. Sorry, dude. That's what we usually say about Canadians, but I just couldn't resist.
The song is called "You'll Be Back," and it's hilarious. Yeah, it's really fucking hilarious. I recommend everybody watch it on YouTube because he's funny as the whole thing is funny as shit. So, anyway, let's see what else. Sean says the Empire will strike back. It is striking back because it's doing a better job with crypto regs than we are. So you know, where is that? I just had an article for that. Actually, it got royal assent, their crypto policy. I'm trying to find the article because I've got it.
With the appropriate royal 10% agency fee on top.
Well, there you go. I mean, you know, what would it be without the royalty taking their cut? You know,
that's insurance, buddy. Dude. Yeah, that's your insurance.
Yeah, yeah. Sean loves paying that because he loves the royals. He's a
I don't know who the royals are. I wonder who the royals are kicking up to.
I think he's got photos of the royal family on his wall, and he's minting an entire royals ordinals line, is what I
think. What's that, the teenage prince line he's doing?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. That's funny.
Oh, man.
Let's see what else. Financial Services and Markets Bill receives royal assent. The act is central to the government's vision to grow the economy and create an open, sustainable, and technologically advanced financial services sector. I assume royal assent means the royal said it's cool, go for it.
That's my read.
I don't know how the legislation
works. I don't know if like, yeah, there's something there with like every, I don't know if every major bill has to go out for like assent from the royals or if it's something special. Yeah, I don't know. Like, and then it could go back for a vote. I'm no expert. I'm just, you know,
yeah,
just trying to think that one through because I know it's pretty discreet, obviously.
Right.
You know, because you know, if you're royals, you don't necessarily want to be seen as if you're controlling too much. And I think they do a good job of balancing that. But I think there's some kind of, it might be part of their parliamentary process. I'm not 100% sure. Because I don't budgets go over for like royal assent and things like that.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Sean will weigh in on this or some of our other Tory listeners.
He said the king queen needs to sign any bill. Oh, shit.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, I assume that's like if it's passed, they rarely don't sign it. But, I wonder, is there a non-assent, a dissent override for that? I don't know. Anyway, it's a part of a whole financial act, but part of it is enables the regulation of crypto assets to support their safe adoption in the UK. So
I like it. Niblet says, I like it.
Says that's the last step before law. So if you had a renegade royal, they could muck up the works, I guess.
Hey, Niblets, quick question. Does there any kind of like legacy from the, I guess, the Commonwealth where there's a royal assent on Canadian legislation? We'll be curious to hear your thoughts there.
He said Commonwealth countries need royal assent as well.
Okay.
There you go. Sean says it's more an ivory stamp, but total formality. All right. So they stamp everything that comes in. All right. Okay. All right. There you go. We have our British how a bill becomes a law.
There you go. I love it, man.
Hey, I'm going to put this link in the show notes, but I went through the Coinbase filing for dismissal against the SEC, and it is an absolute thing of beauty. Like, I have never read, and their previous ones were similar, but it's not a thing of beauty. I mean, it is a thing of beauty strategically, but it's a thing of beauty because the prose is written. So even if you've never read a legal document in your life, you will understand every point they are making and why it's important. It's like the most beautifully written legal document I have ever seen. It's absolutely amazing. Just, I'm a little flabbergasted, right? Because there's none of the legalese. It's like, hey, we want to make sure the whole world knows what we're doing and why we're saying this. And they do a beautiful job of it. The primary points of it are, they're arguing that nothing on their exchange was ever a security from the inception, that they do not meet those securities, those tokens do not meet the standard of an investment contract. They do a really great job of delineating out why and how it doesn't meet that. They believe that they make the point that secondary market is definitely not a security because they make that point, obviously. And then they start making the point that this is an illegal move by the SEC, that it's beyond their powers, beyond the scope of their powers, and that Congress must weigh in on something so substantial. And they make a really good argument for that. They basically say Gensler is a hypocrite when they quote from videos when he said in 2021 that he doesn't have the authority unless Congress acts. And they say, of course, Congress hasn't acted, but they quote him on multiple occasions saying that under oath to Congress. It says that regulation by enforcement does not give them the authority that they are now acting upon. And then they pull in the major questions doctrine, which is my favorite thing right now, just because of the makeup of the Supreme Court of the United States, saying that basically SEC must get in its lane and stop trying to create law, which is the job of Congress, and that it actually not only means they don't have the authority, it actually is an illegal action on their part. And they are intimating, I think, that there are some liabilities associated with them taking these illegal actions. So really well done. I'm going to tell everyone, I'm going to put the link in the show notes because I really would encourage everyone to at least read the first 25, 30 pages. I know nobody has time, but these are really salient arguments to be made. And I think they will help all of us kind of arm ourselves in the discussions we have with everyday folks. So I just want to encourage everyone to take the time to read it. You will get something out of it. It's really good. So Sean says the Coinbase stuff is a 2-year-old temper tantrum trying to gather the US versus them sentiment. I wouldn't call it a temper tantrum, but I would call it fairly sound legal arguments. And I definitely agree it is them trying to gather sentiment. It's absolutely them trying to champion the cause and get the community engaged and on board. I think that's why they wrote it so well and did such a good job of communicating what the points were. So I agree with that. I'm not so much the temper tantrum. I thought it was a well-reasoned document. Of course, they will have parts of their arguments that the court will not agree with. They may not agree with any of it, but I think they're making a pretty strong case. And if all it is good PR, then, you know, good on them for that as well. So they're thinking strategically, which is what I like. So anyway, something else we've been up to, those of you in the Canto world, there's a new project called Canto Namespace built on the integrated Canto identity protocol. Canto Namespace was built or conceived of by Scott Lewis, one of the original founders. And I did a step-by-step how to use it, because there's a couple of things that may be a little confusing. It actually has a really cool mint and fuse process that makes it a much more fair strategy, and makes it so that domain squatting is really difficult and could get really expensive if you weren't smart about it. So I'm really impressed with this, and the identity protocol stuff is coming out in the next few days. And I think it's going to be really cool and give Canto an advantage. And as they keep adding these little pieces to the core system, I think it makes Canto stronger and stronger. But anyway, I would encourage anybody to go over there and grab one. I grabbed Brad Nickel and a couple of others. But it's a really interesting process where you first you buy like Scrabble letters that have letters and emojis like these. And then from those you pick, so these trays are each $2 each. And then from those you pick the letters or emojis you want to be part of your identity on the chain. And then you fuse them, and it can cost you upwards. If you only do 8 letters, it can cost you upwards of 64 notes, so about $64. I did it a little longer, so it was, I get 9 letters, so it was $32 plus the original tray mint fee, which was $20. So anyway.
So, Brad, quick question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quick question about all these naming ones, because I did one on ZK Sync over the weekend too. And my question is, if all of these chains are going to have these naming services or domain naming services, how are they all going to, I mean, what's going to be the advantage, you know, as in like, is it trying to cluster people to hub on that chain and then emanate from there cross chain, multi-chain to the rest of the crypto world? Or what do you see it being?
I don't know that it's necessarily the strategy is, hey, we want everyone to use this everywhere else. From what I've had my conversations with Scott Lewis, mm-hmm. is he really wanted from the beginning identity protocols to be a core part of the engine eventually, so that interactions, logging in, communication, social media capabilities, all kinds of things get enabled around this to make it easier for people to use. Right. And so I don't know that there's necessarily a big cross-chain strategy. But that said, last week, the Layer Zero Labs integration launched, and you can now on the homepage seamlessly move from Ethereum and Canto and back without any of the previous hassles there was to onboarding. And so 2 days later, PancakeSwap integrated ETH Canto pools into PancakeSwap and launched those using the Layer Zero Lab stuff. And shortly, I think in the next couple of weeks, Layer Zero Labs is a cross-chain system for a ton of chains. And evidently in the next week or two, we will be enabled across all of those chains. So now developers could come in, easily create cross-chain applications that they want to build on Canto and get people on and off Canto fairly easily and quickly. So
that's cool. Well, I guess my question is more, since, you know, we're all buying these on different chains, you know, sure. The different, and I guess to facilitate activity on those chains, but like ZK Sync has like a multi-chain or cross-chain capability built in already, supposedly,
right.
To do that. And what I'm wondering, it's because remember like when .com names came out, remember there was a scramble forum and everybody was, there would be an auction, and, you know, some went for pretty decent sums of money. Like if you got investments.com or cash.com or, you know, cars.com would be one. But then all the other ones came along, you know, .net and .blah, blah, blah and all, everything else. And so now we're adding more domain name extensions around different chains. And yeah. I'm just trying to kind of get a handle on what people think the strategic vision is there of how those get used in the future and how do you compete with the other chain domain IDs, and is there a need to compete with them? You know, how are I'm kind of curious about that. So I just don't get it.
I think we're going to end up with a mess of a bunch of different ones. Somebody will build something that, you know, aggregates your identity across multiple chains, right? So you can pick one, and then that is recognized through some mechanism on the other chains. But I have no idea. I know that the motivation on the Kanto one was we want identity for our chain. I don't know where they're taking it beyond that. And I don't have a clue how that's all going to shake out. But my assumption is somebody will figure out a methodology for it. Like, for example, I really like the idea of using the identity from Lens protocol because I like Lens. Well, that's all Polygon, right?
Right.
But I think that makes a ton of sense. But I think other chains are going to say, that's great, but, you know, we want some enablement of the Lens protocol, you know, through our chain. And, you know, it's a Polygon thing right now. So,
yeah.
So I think all this will kind of shake out over time, but, you know, I mean, if you remember what it was like registering a domain in the mid 90s, that was a nightmare of epic proportions. So, I'm sure all of this will get easier. There may be like, you know, some aggregator that helps people buy them across the board. There's already, for Kanto, there's already an NFT marketplace called Blank Rasa that started up that has trays available. You can buy secondarily, as well as names. So, you know, I think shake out. Right now, I have no idea what it's going to end up.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, there was always the premium for .com. Okay. Yeah. I guess there probably still is. You know, of course, I thought that was going to sunset in a couple of years. And here we are 25 years later. People are still using domain names. But because I kind of see, like, when we think about Toby Rush and Radin and their use of the phone number to move stuff around and do things like that, you know, and I see this as almost the same thing. We're all trying to develop some type of tech that makes it easy, that it makes it easier for people that aren't like software developers to use crypto, right?
Right.
And so if you have something like that that follows you around and allows you to do transactions and things in ways where it's, you know, like, you know, turning on the coffee machine basically or something. You know, I kind of feel like it's going that direction. But I just don't know which way. Because remember also back then there was the power company, cable company, phone company battle over that, you know, the pre-Wi-Fi world, that battle from the pole to the house or to your desktop computer in that house. I wonder if something like that could shake out here. And is it like .eth becomes the, you know, apex domain name identifier or a .btc maybe? I don't know. I'm kind of curious. I'd love to hear the community's thoughts on that, you know, over the next couple of weeks.
Sean wants to buy ETH is a shitcoin.eth, and he's wondering if he can. I'm sure, Sean, if nobody has taken it, you can get in there and acquire it and take part in the Ethereum ecosystem. So we're all for that. Absolutely.
It's a lot of typing, though.
Chuck says the problem with all the identity stuff is there's currently no validation. I guess what you mean by that, Chuck, is there's no way for the other person to verify that is your identity, unless they have some tie to the wallet that the identity is tied to, knowing that it's you in the first place. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, the good news is that every identity in most of these systems, I assume, is unique, right? So if someone establishes a relationship with a protocol, then you have verification of identity based on the attachment of the name to the wallet. The problem is if somebody sells that identity on a marketplace to someone else, it's no longer attached to that wallet. So is there a way to tie them to the wallet? I'm going to be really interested to see what else is coming out of the identity protocol from Kanto, because this isn't the core identity protocol. I haven't read the docs on it yet, but I'm curious to see if they've solved that problem. But I agree with you, Chuck. That is an issue. He said older identity systems, PGP, GPG, at least let you have others vet your ID. And the real value comes when identity has an associated reputation. I think that will probably potentially happen. I think that's what these, what's the concept that Vitalik came up with, Joe? The ones you can't transfer, spirit.
Soulbound?
Soulbound, thank you. Soulbound NFTs. I think that's, Chuck, where the kind of the validity comes in. But yeah, I definitely agree that.
Your boys at Kanto have a really good opportunity here to kind of define what it's going to be going forward. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of like small and nimble enough to kind of try to set a vision there, which would be pretty, pretty cool. And, you know, it just seems like there's a big opportunity here that someone can seize a day. Cause we are always talking about everything about identity, from digital identity management, biological proof of identity, you know, fusing kind of the DNA data in with some kind of algorithmic, I don't know what, cryptography thing, so that, you have it in both worlds,
yep.
Both in, real world and digital worlds. I mean, that's coming. Yeah, and it seems I would love it to be in Kanto's hands over, awesome. Say Algorand.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just my point.
More on the regulatory front, the guys at the Blockchain Association and DeFi Education Fund, Jake Chervinsky, are going hardcore. They've actually created a primer for anyone engaged in legal disputes for forcing Gensler to recuse himself from the cases because of his past comments and hypocrisies. And they do a really good job of laying it out. I love seeing them doing this. I frankly hope every association starts coming out with more legal defense strategies to go hardcore after people and give them the ability to defend themselves. And if Gensler's out of the voting process on the commission, you now have a tie vote for the pro-crypto versus anti-crypto folks. So I think this is a really cool strategy. Of course, it's only a cool strategy for as long as it works, or if in the first case it gets rejected by a judge, then somebody else can try it with a different angle. But we have to find out if it's going to work and actually be tested. But they obviously put a ton of time into building this strategy and trying to figure out a way to handle it. Further to that, on the idea that the SEC is has stepped beyond its power and is operating illegally, SCOTUS granted cert to a case on what's the date, on the 30th. So on was that Friday? Yeah. That would decide the legality of SEC Gov's in-house administrative court, showing once again that the court intends to curtail administrative overreach. So the SEC's court is in-house for administrative regulatory enforcement, right? So you have a court and a group of judges who all work and socialize and hang out with the attorneys who are prosecuting the cases, whereas the people trying to defend people in these courts, they don't have those kinds of relationships. I don't know that that's the gist of this case, but that's kind of the conflict with how the SEC operates in terms of the administrative court. So this will be really interesting to see. Look, I'm not a big fan of this court. Don't get me wrong. I'm not at all. But in our case, the major cases doctrine and overreach of power for this constitutionally aligned kind of originalist court is very much a good possibility for us in the crypto front. So if we can get shit to the Supreme Court to fight on cases on our behalf, or even cases that are tangentially related, dealing with regulatory bodies trying to overstep their power, it could get really interesting with this Supreme Court for crypto. So we'll see what happens. Chuck said, that's right. Legislative overreach is reserved for the courts. Fuck those executive branch posers. You're not kidding. I mean, look, last week the court ruled on a case that actually was based on something that never happened.
So,
we do have that problem. I don't know. Did you ever mess around with Shrimpy, Joe?
Shrimpy
was one of the first kind of bot systems that I ever encountered. It was actually pretty large, I guess, at some point, 100,000 customers. And it actually was a pretty nice interface, but they are shutting down as of July the 7th in 4 days. And it's kind of like a historical marker, at least personally for me, nostalgic wise, because they were one of the first platforms. Like they were a platform devoted to automated, simplified automated trading strategies on centralized exchanges. So bummer to see them going. I don't know necessarily. I think they had a monthly fee model because they couldn't charge a percentage because I think they were US based.
Yeah.
And I guess they just couldn't get enough people in the longer term to sign up and provide the revenue. And, look, like Sean says, the volumes are drying up. So I'm sure the customers are flying away as well. So,
And what exchanges would you, the Americans, I mean, what exchanges would you use those bots on now?
Yeah.
I mean,
they have international customers that they connected to the regular Binance and everything. But when you're bulk US, the U.S. customers don't have much place to go, it's kind of hard to keep something like this going. So
yeah.
Anyway, let's see. Oh, you know what? I meant to read this. I haven't had time to, but evidently there was a bet on when the on a one of these market poly market, one of the betting marketplaces on chain, there was a bet about when the sub, whether or not the sub would be found. And evidently there was something in the wording of the, you know, the fine print of the bet that in fact, a lot of the bettors were correct and would have made a lot of money, but there was something, you know what? I should read it before I give it. Evidently what it came down to was some of the language relative to that bet meant that even though they found it, these people didn't necessarily win the bet, I think was what was the issue, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, I saw something. I didn't read it either, but I did see that headline. It's probably something about, you know, finding the whole thing or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, or, but yeah, I always say that. It's just like I saw, go ahead. I saw something like that about like Michael Jordan game where, you know, somebody hit this winning or hit a shot from like the other free throw line for $1 million. And then all the insurance companies were trying not to pay him because he had played like 1 year of college basketball or something like that. So in the end, you know, nobody ever wants to pay. That's the lesson learned here. So any of these contests, they're always going to try to figure out how not to do it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, buddy.
So for the first time, the amount of Ethereum on in staking has eclipsed the amount of Ethereum on centralized exchanges. I found that interesting. It looks like that a lot of the Ethereum leaving exchanges is moving into liquid staking or direct validator staking. So I think that's an interesting data point. Looks like a lot of people are kind of saying, you know what, I'm going to be in it for the long term. I'm just going to sit here and earn more Ethereum until shit comes back. So Sean says the Titanic and submarines, great examples of Irish engineering. Had I known there was a bet I could take.
I love it.
That's awesome. That's awesome, dude. Hey, folks, you are not in our Telegram community yet. Why not? Sean has been posting some really cool things around some projects he's working on. I encourage you to get in there and give him feedback. t.me/missiondefi. t.me/missiondefi, along with a lot of really cool discussions going on.
Yeah. Well. And Brad does his BitBoy impersonations over there, too. So you, you got to just go to just to check that out.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing to do. I didn't realize it, but Cathie Wood's ARK is in line first for Bitcoin ETF. Yep. And then BlackRock is next. And evidently, I don't know if I have this loaded up or not, but evidently all of the other ones that filed, Fidelity, et cetera, after BlackRock, when the SEC said, we need to know what exchange you're going to put it in, they all came back in and said, we're putting it in Coinbase. So everyone has amended their filing, I guess, to try to make sure they are dotting I's and crossing T's for the SEC's demands. I think that was probably just an attempt to put it off. My gut tells me they're still going to try to reject these, but we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Well, what other exchanges would they have put down other than Coinbase?
It was custodial stuff. So I assume there's other like institutional custodians.
Like NASDAQ. And okay. Yeah, so you're talking about other companies. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know. Bittrex also filed for dismissal based on the similar structure to what Coinbase did. So not surprising there in terms of the SEC going after them. This was really interesting, and I can't find the tweets that I found about this, but there was a guy. So we all know that, well, we don't all know, you don't do much Twitter these days, but Elon Musk this weekend imposed rate limits on everybody. So if you're not subscribing, if you're not, if you don't have the blue check, you were limited to viewing 600 tweets per day. And if you were blue checks, you were limited to 6,000. And I think he upped it to 800 and 8,000. And what it turns out is that this was actually, I've read another series of tweets about the fact that they didn't get their servers off of Google in time and didn't pay their bill and are ending their relationship with them. And so they probably just don't have enough capacity to handle their normal daily load because they have not planned ahead and provisioned for what they're going to do for hosting. And so we think that's why they did this. A lot of people are trying to turn it into, you know, Elon is a hero. He's trying to stop the AIs of the world from spidering the Twitter and stealing our data. And he's making sure they can't violate our privacy, yada, yada. I think that could be a symptom. I mean, an outcome of it, but I don't think that was the reasoning. I think the reasoning was they didn't plan ahead and get their shit together. But there was a really interesting series of tweets. I'm going to try to find them when I get a chance, on the idea that all of the things that are happening in social media related to AI scraping all these websites. So Reddit killing, making their APIs expensive, Twitter making their APIs expensive, and now rate limiting users. All of these things that they were making the argument here is, oh, and then the idea that AI is now generating hundreds and thousands of fake websites to either scam people or sell shit to people, basically clogging up the internet with garbage, right? The interesting argument this person was making is that this then opens the door to a system of micropayments for content, right? It actually could push us out of the advertising regime that we're in and selling our data regime that we're in with most social media and the web, and push us into a micropayment system, which actually is beautiful for crypto, right?
Yeah. So
those platforms that were kind of set up for that and had planned for that may be in a good position, because if the internet gets just clogged up with garbage, there may be, you know, there may be some play here for kind of micropayment access to content and social media at a, you know, a higher level. Maybe you can have free access like Elon's doing, and then you can get more or ad free or whatever. But their argument was that it actually could, as all of these sites lock down because they want the AI companies to pay them for taking their data, and as crap gets populated on the internet because of AI, that a clean experience may be something that people are willing to pay for. And so the argument is that crypto and blockchain are perfectly positioned for that. So
that's interesting. Yeah. That is interesting.
Yeah, really interesting.
My thing, when I looked at it, I was kind of like how many tweets you're allowed to read. I'm like, God, I guess people are reading that many a day.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, I can remember when I used to get into it for like 8 hours straight, and I'd be like, what the fuck am I doing? And, you know, you get looped in pretty quickly. And, you know, when you're covering all these, well, between like, you know, war news and politics and crypto and macro and, I mean, geopolitics is like, it's just, you know, never ending. And since a lot of it's raw news, you know, it hasn't been curated, you got a lot more content to sift through to figure out what's real and what's not. I like, because you get the breaking news on stuff, but, you know, the uncurated stuff. But then at the same time, you got to be careful not to react to the first thing you see.
Yeah.
Not you, but I'm saying, you know, people do. Because, you know, 9 out of 10 times, it's probably just going to be raw intel or raw information at that point. It's not verified or validated, but it steers you, points you in the right direction. That's what I like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say this. I mean, I don't use the homepage of Twitter at all. I don't use it for you. My entire Twitter experience is, I follow people, and the ones I want to hear from, I turn on notifications. So you have your notifications wall, right, where you see everything that's been replied to or liked that you've tweeted or whatever. And you see everyone you followed with notifications on, what they have tweeted, right? And then I create topic lists. So I have an AI topic list. I have DeFi 2.0, DeFi strategies list, legal, crypto legal list. I have all of these lists that I use on particular topics for people that I trust. Right. So for the most part, my experience is not algorithm fed. I rarely interact with the Twitter's algorithm at all. My entire experience is controlled and, you know, curated by me and by the lists I've set up. So highly recommend that to anybody.
You're not just a scroller, basically, is what you're saying.
Not a scroller.
Slovakia
has passed a law that will lower the tax on crypto from 39% to 7%. So if you've got some Slovakian heritage, you may want to check on the citizenship requirements there. Could be a good place to be if you got any of that in your background. You know, frankly, that's great. And New Zealand says they've ramped up monitoring of stablecoins and crypto assets, but sees no reason to add new regulatory infrastructure around crypto at all. So they are not going to take any steps to up their regulatory scrutiny of crypto in that country, which is, you know, awesome.
Yeah, you know what's pretty cool about that too? You know, New Zealand's a, for the non-Americans or for everybody, whatever. It's a, that's a, you know, a frequently mentioned retirement destination for the well-heeled, let's put it that way. And the fact that you can roll, and second thing is their real estate market has taken a big hit lately. I think it's lost, you know, billions in value for, you know, I don't even remember why. It's nothing, it's more like a supply-demand thing than anything else. But if you can now retire there with all your crypto and buy real estate with it, that sounds pretty pretty nice.
Yeah, citizenship there is not, or visas there are not easy, but once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
And I've known a lot. There's a lot of technical talent there, technology talent there. I've worked with and partnered with several technology companies there, and have always been thoroughly impressed with the citizens there. And I also read a study, a climate study, that said New Zealand will be one of the last places on Earth to go underwater when the whole world floods from climate. So that's a positive as well.
So that's going to be a little bit behind Palmetto Bay, right? Or Color Bay.
Like probably next week, you know?
That's why I always take those condos. Everybody's like, why do you take such a high floor? And I'm like, well, if that tsunami wave comes rolling through, I got a better chance than most.
Well, dude, Miami Beach floods on a daily basis these days. The aquifers are backing up. You know, that's our water supply. So, you know, it's all good. Sean said, if he limited it to 8 tweets a day, this would be a better world. Yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
That's good. Let's see what else. Oh, my this guy, Sam C. Zun from Twitter, who always has been, he's been very active in helping people with exploits on both analysis and spotting exploits before they happen. He was heavily involved with helping SushiSwap prevent a an exploit in their their launch platform where people could launch tokens and raise money. So really reputable source. He has just launched a security alerts Telegram channel. So I will share the link to this in the show notes. I have a high trust value with him, and feel like whatever he puts out is probably pretty good. Definitely would encourage everyone to sign up for that Telegram and turn on alerts, because he'll probably know most of the security stuff that's going on as it launches, but that just launched. OKX is spending $70 million to sponsor Man City. So that's interesting. Soccer continues to get the advertising money. And in this case, it's Man City is getting it. So
Did the Qataris just buy Manchester City?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think they were just auctioned off. Some big team was just auctioned off over there. I mean, a lot of our Brits will know this, but so think about it. You know, with Dubai and crypto and the Gulf Coast region, you know, and you know all the crypto activity there, it actually makes some sense for OKX. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because they're not really targeting, you know, American customers. You know, they're targeting customers in the markets where crypto's, I guess, thriving or going to thrive. So
I think I still have an account with them. I need to go check it out. I know they do. They're probably doing strict KYC right now, but I'm going to go check out my account there and see if I can. Maybe I'll create a new one with that Palau.
So you're going to resurrect Juanito Gonzalez?
There you go.
No, I remember that. Remember back in the day when, like, I think it was the DNA token between Cryptopia and OKX. Remember the pricing differential was like, you know, like 3x difference, and you could buy on OKX and dump it on Cryptopia and like triple your money instantly. It was crazy back then.
Yeah, it was crazy. This is really interesting. FTX, the bankruptcy team, is saying that customers are owed $8.7 billion. All right. Let's see what Sean said. Man City has been owned by UAE folks since 2008 or so. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So already owned by UAE. Anyway, FTX bankruptcy team says the exchange owes customers $8.7 billion, and they've already recovered $6.4 billion that they have in fiat currency and stable coins So a total of, it says about $7 billion in liquid assets have been recovered so far. So I'm a little, I mean, look, you know, 1.7 billion is a lot of money left to go, but you know, I'm not understanding the context of this, but that's a lot of money recovered for a place that was supposedly burning it all, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a little confused.
It sounds like a couple of accounting entries away from, hey, we're profitable over here.
What the fuck?
Well, you know, obviously they were disorganized and mismanaging stuff, but I always thought that, you know, I didn't really see it, you know, they didn't lose all the money. And the way it was characterized at the beginning, it's like, oh, it goes under, there goes another $9 billion or whatever it is, $9 billion or something.
Yeah.
And like it goes to zero, but it doesn't, you know, so.
I'm like, what the fuck? I mean.
One decent rally, and all of a sudden, hey, you're in the money.
Yeah, I mean, and they've spent like $200 million of that on legal fees. So, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a little blown away by this because I never thought the numbers would get close to that. I actually thought that the customers were owed a lot more than that. And that may be part of the discrepancy, right? Is that the bankruptcy people are saying this is what's owed, and the customers are going to say, no fucking way, you owe me a lot more than that. Now, creditors may be another $10 billion. I don't know, but you know, still.
Well, I think to me, it's like I put creditors in the same category just because. And depositors, because a lot of those that would be creditors, they were part of these sophisticated sort of swap transactions where they were doing cross positioning across each other's platforms. You know, to me, that's like, you know, the Gemini, Genesis, DCG, you know, all of those crews that did different things right. along the way. I look at them as customers too, myself, right. in my mind. So sense. I look at it, I'd like to know what the, you know, when you say you had 8.9 million in deposits, how are you accounting for that? Does that mean that right. somebody dropped 10 Bitcoin in there when it was worth 60,000 and calls that a $600,000 deposit? Or are you recording that at 10 times, you know, 30 grand as a 300 right. grand deposit? And how are you accounting for that? To me, that's the key issue. And so the creditor, the people that deposited and want it back, they're going to be saying, no, you owe me $600,000. I gave right. you $600,000 right. worth of Bitcoin. And then the people who took it, I'd be like, I'm out there. That was 300 grand. You know, so
look what Sean's saying. I know what? Sean lost a chunk of money there. Sean, are you saying that you've been paid back? Because Sean is saying as a client, they have given me and others I know exact correct amounts. So you're saying you've already received your funds back that were on the exchange that you thought were gone for good? I guess that's what he's saying. Hopefully he'll respond.
Sounds like it.
He said, also said the uptick story at the end of the day will be very interesting. Another chapter in CZ's book. Yeah. Well, that's true. But this is really interesting. I wonder how many people have received their funds back that just had it locked. Right. He said, in what we are owed. Wow. You know, this was
so they are paying people back already.
This is made out to be such a massive clusterfuck, and I get that it was a clusterfuck internally from a management perspective, but sure seems to me that it wasn't quite as bad as the picture that was painted.
They did better than Enron. They did better than Madoff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they did better than every TradeFi scandal you can think of for the last 25 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is a home run. Compared to all those other people.
Oh, he said not received. They are calculating what is owed correctly. Okay. They haven't paid him back yet what is owed, but they have stated the correct amounts. So what he's saying is that between him and other people he knows that had money in the exchange when it shut down, the people who did are getting amounts to them that are correct. They are not like lowering it. They're not trying to scam them or whatever. They are actually saying, yes, we owe you X, and Sean is saying that what they said they owe him is what it is exactly what they owe him. So
cool.
That's interesting. Really interesting.
Well, you know, when you go through U.S. bankruptcy court, you know, the I's get dotted, T's get crossed, man, to nauseating levels of delay and patience requirements, but it does get done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me see if I have anything else here. Let's see. What is this? Oh no, that's an identity verification story I haven't read yet. Yeah, I haven't read all of these yet. That's, you know, it's all I got, Joe. And I got a call in 12 minutes. So
yeah, the only thing I was okay. I was going to add a couple things before we go, real fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want ZK Sync. You know, our buddies Maverick are over there. We had on the, both sides of the. We've had them on Mission DeFi and DeFi Lunch. Yep. And their token just listed on Binance a couple days ago. So if people like that protocol, you might want to check that out. Cool. I bought it on actually ZK Sync. So you have a swap thing on Maverick there. And also there's another one there called Uzumi Finance. That's pretty interesting. It's got perps and swaps. So if you're doing your daily activities, you know, or you're like interested in that chain, those are the two I would go check out. There's other protocols too, but those are the ones that, you know, you can actually start doing stuff in now. And so I staked some into a liquidity pool on Uzumi, and they actually, you know, do it with the NFT. So instead of like adding different tranches, when you add more money to it, it just adds it to that NFT already that shows your holdings, you know, versus creating a new one constantly. So there's some clever stuff there. So I invite anybody, just go look up, check out Maverick and Uzumi Finance on ZK Sync. Super easy to get in there. It's fast. Looks interesting. So I'm trying to learn as much as I can about that. So check it out, everyone.
I will definitely do that. I'll definitely do that.
Oh, yeah. One more thing. Well, go ahead. One more thing for you. Tons of airdrops coming from like Uzumi and others. So there's future air. So you want to do the swaps on those sites. Because you'll get the airdrops from those sites as well. And they're sharing 50% of the ZKS whenever ZK Sync comes out and those do their airdrop. Whatever Uzumi Finance gets in those tokens, 50% get distributed to the people who use the platform. Nice. So just remember that too. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Brett.
No, it's okay.
Go ahead. Sean was saying...
Sean said that the number of tokens matches up. What is owed in the coins held and the price is now the same as pre-crash. Okay, so it all balances out. Well, listen, I'm actually feeling pretty positive right about now, Joe. I think that we're still probably going to have some really serious issues with all the liquidity problems on chain and everything that Sean talks about regularly. But I am glad to see crypto starting to get aggressive legally, which I think they should have done. I think there's a lot of interesting strategies happening. I think that there are folks who are going to try to take advantage of what the Supreme Court's doing to put us in a better position. And, you know, maybe we get lucky and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Bitcoin ETFs get approved and then we're really soaring, right? And the one thing I think that might save it from Gensler, these ETFs is it allows him an opportunity to show that he is pro crypto and innovation, right? He can say, yeah, I'm going to allow these ETFs. It's my institutional buddies. That's cool. Bitcoin is okay because it's decentralized, blah, 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 without having to give up on his fight for everything else's security, right? And so that's, for me, the one thing I'm holding out for that getting
approved.
We'll see. Who knows?
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, and it is like, it will be game changing at that point, but they'll probably... It could be the event that it could be the thing that creates that big dip that Sean's forecasting, or that we get to step. I won't say forecast. That's not the right word, but that we all talk about a lot on the show.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a GBTC liquidation issue that comes up with those ETFs. Like, I guess all of that can theoretically be sold at that point. Yeah. So there might be a short term drop if that is indeed happening, but. Hey, clean out the fat. Let's go on the next rip. Let's get it on. Let's go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. All right. Well, listen, I got to run. Got to get ready for a call. But listen, appreciate you guys. Thank you, Shizzy. Thank you. I'm not Shizzy. Shizzy wasn't here today. Where the hell is Shizzy? Sean, Niblets, Chuck, thanks so much for participating. Glad you guys are here. Really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun on a show on Friday with the Block Bytes guys. A lot of fun. I posted a link to a clip they pulled out. So they're good guys over there. Enjoyed that show. Please join our Mission DeFi Lunch Telegram. It is t.me/MissionDeFi, t.me/MissionDeFi. Lots of really cool conversations going on, including Sean's efforts for a campaign to recruit folks into Bitcoinery. And a lot of people give them feedback on that. And I'm really impressed with that. But there's a ton of stuff going on there. Alhambra is posting airdrop stuff. He said he's going to post some more soon that he's been checking on and examining. So I encourage everybody to join the community and get involved. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please rate and review us. Just take the 10 seconds it takes to do that so that we get a boost in the algorithm. If you're on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed. Click the little bell so you get alerted. And smash the thumbs up so we also get the boost from that. Joe, I hope you have a great afternoon. Thank you very much. No show tomorrow, boys and girls, July the 4th. We're going to take the day off. So holiday here. Joe's got to go out and shoot some fireworks.
Garage.
Do all that good stuff. But we'll be back Thursday, hopefully with Sean. I haven't confirmed yet, Sean yet, so I don't want to say that until we're sure. But hopefully we'll be back Thursday with Sean.
Yeah, well, if I'm off tomorrow at lunchtime shooting fireworks off and drinking, we're going to have a real problem later on that night. So, but anyhow, that won't be going on until nighttime. But hey, thanks, everyone. You guys, everyone here in the U.S., have a great day tomorrow. And those outside, have a great day as well. And we'll see everybody on Thursday.
Take care. Everybody have a good one.